Today is April 21st, Tuesday, and I'm interviewing my third grade teacher, Mrs. Wilma Heilman. Ms. Heilman, when and where did you teach?
Okay, I taught in Evansville, 1951 to 1953. Then I took a leave of absence until 1961. Then I started in Warwick County at Elberfeld Elementary, third grade. And I shouldn't say that I taught second grade the first 3 years in Evansville.
Okay, why did you take a leave of absence?
For my children. I had two daughters, and at that time we didn't worry about getting back into a position. We just stayed with our children, stay-at-home mom.
Describe the classroom you remember best.
Probably at the Warwick County School, Elberfeld Elementary. We were in a new addition, and everything was so much brighter and cleaner and up to date and modern. And we had wonderful students, and I loved to decorate the bulletin boards. And many hours were spent in the classroom having fun and making friends with the children.
On your bulletin board, did you use like the children's artwork and stuff? Or did you like buy materials to put on there?
Some consisted of commercial materials, but however, most of mine were in regards to the units taught, and I would say one half or more on the wall display and things were the papers of the students.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's better to use the children's artwork and stuff instead of.
Yes, and you can tie it into some of your units.
Yeah.
Start out with a theme and then add the written stories and all the things that go with it.
Yeah. Okay, describe a typical day in your teaching career.
Typical day might be a little bit difficult to put it in a nutshell. We started out usually, one thing teachers need to remember, especially beginning teachers, is to keep an accurate attendance record. And that was always kind of my downfall. I wanted to get into the subject matter real quick. But typical day, most of the time I had all the papers prepared, and while I was doing the attendance and taking at that time the lunch money, the kids were working on their daily papers. The time was being fully occupied, and they didn't have time to, you know, chit-chat or, you know, maybe get off on the wrong start that day. They were there to work and to get their subject matters, you know, in their mind.
Did you feel rushed time-wise? I mean, like,
you
only had like 7 hours and you had so much to do.
Not really, because it seemed like by the end of the year, I was the one that kind of could figure out. You would pick out the most important. And sometimes if you saw that you weren't going to make it through a whole textbook, you would pick out the major and the more important things. Yeah. And there was were some things sometimes that I would delete. But going through the typical day, the recesses at that time were times when you would get your second breath. Sometimes you were on duty, you had duties, but when you didn't, you were in there preparing for the next session that you were going to have. Are usually working on bulletin boards. I mean, it's a never-ending process when you're looking ahead as you progress through the year of teaching. And the noon hours the same way. Many noon hours were duty filled. However, when you weren't on duty, you were applying yourself to your job. And then you covered all the subject matters that in the third grade, they were really making adjustments to a lot of hardback books where they never had that in the first and second grade. And they were hitting all the major subjects. And you taught a little of besides the language arts, you had a lot of math to cover, And multiplication tables were the most important when you got into the second semester. And then the rest of the day would be devoted to health, science, social studies. And you had a lot of subjects to cover in third grade.
Did you have an assistant in AAU or anything?
Near the end, 1 year or 2 years, I had a large enrollment, and then they were starting to giving an assistance. I did have once or twice during my career. And if you want to remember something unusual, back in the early 60s, I had a large classroom. They were always over 30. Yeah. And then 1 year, when we were in this new edition, I had 45. Wall to wall, and the assistant superintendent said he thought I could handle it. And I did. They were very good. There were many good boys. There were more boys in there than girls. But that was one of my highlights that year.
More boys than girls?
Uh-huh.
Really?
And they were also good. I mean, there were a few that were antsy and tried you, but... I guess that's one of my best years. I mean, here it was the largest, and that was the year that I had to delete, because you had to grade so many more papers,
yeah.
Like in spelling. I would delete one test instead of having I think I had a test, but I let them check it, because I didn't have time to run through everything. Mm-hmm. And you would delete some things in a large enrollment. As compared to a small enrollment, to get through.
That's a lot of kids.
So I really got off on a typical day here, into a lot of history. But the days usually make your days go fast in teaching, because every minute is filled, so full. And I think later on we did have some days. Like they would go to music class, then we had another 30-minute period devoted to preparation time. Mm-hmm. So, and another thing in a typical day, you have to be a bookkeeper as well with your materials, because if you're out the next day, you have to have it written in your plan book where you are and the page number. So you were constantly keeping up your plan book at the same time.
Did you find you spent a lot of time grading papers, like at night, watching TV, or weekends?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Especially in elementary, but I don't know how far that extends, that everyone that I knew always carried papers home. We all had subject matter to check, so we'd know the next day whether we need to repeat that, review that, or continue with the next portion of the lesson. And... the preparation time also, like when you're going into a new textbook, you had to have some time to do that. If you didn't have enough time at school, you'd be taking that book home.
Don't you think you'd have been a more productive teacher if you had an aide that, like, while you were teaching, she could be grading papers,
yes,
or going from desk to desk?
Oh, definitely, yeah. The year that I had an aide, that was so helpful, because she did a lot of my checking and running off materials and then working individually. That was another part of it, that this girl could help me with the ones that were having some problems.
Yeah.
They're slower to grasp it. You couldn't get through 40 of them. So you would take, I had the ones that were having more difficulty in one little group, and so she kind of stayed with that group, you know, unbeknownst to them that they were, so she wouldn't have to go all over the room. She could kind of keep an eye on all of them in that one area to help.
And that's a good idea.
Yeah?
Yeah,
but without them knowing it.
Yeah.
You know, without the students knowing it. This was math that this pertained to, that I recall that we did this. And I had them, that was like a row. I had a row, I think. And she just always kind of kept her eye over and above, seeing how they were doing.
Was I in that row?
I don't think so.
I remember you having an aide that one year I was there.
Well, I had very few aides.
Yeah, wasn't that you?
No.
Okay, to move on, describe your relationship with the administrators you worked for. What was their job like the principal and the secretary?
Well, generally my relationship with all the administrators, the principal was the main thing. was always cooperative and upbeat. And the same with the secretary. We all had to get along mm-hmm. to make the day work, because when sometimes there was a discipline problem, you needed the complete cooperation with your principal. And say they were not there. They were absent, or they were in another, you know, position in another place in the school or at a meeting. The secretary or the nurse became your confidant also. And in many cases, you had to have a witness mm-hmm. for whatever confrontation you were having mm-hmm. with a student. But that's one of the main things, to keep a good relationship between all, including the custodian.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, we all were working together mm-hmm. for the benefit of the children, mm-hmm. and that's what we were all there for.
Mm-hmm.
So, the main thing is get along with everybody.
Okay. Describe a student or students you remember.
Well, many students I remember, and many are still friends. But I'll have to select. I will have to select. Maybe I can relate back to my own background, because I came from a very poor family. I was the oldest of 11 children. Mm. Worked my way through school. And especially to a child that might be struggling like I did all through school, I would be I kept an observation of them. And this one particular girl had lots of trouble adjusting to, especially science, I do believe, this hardback science book, and to grasp it. So I remember telling her mom that the grades are important, but you can't expect every student to make A and B. Mm-hmm. You just cannot expect that from every student. And a lot of times it's the C, the average student, who does much better than the more easy mm-hmm. Child that everything comes easy to. And it kind of boosted the mother spirit. And just recently I've talked with her, and the girl has made straight A's at USI.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
She has a job. She's doing wonderful. And she just relates back to how it started all in elementary school.
Wow. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just an average student. You know, mm-hmm. what an average person can do in this world.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have mm-hmm. And some learn so, you know, everything comes to them so easy.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they get out, well, she had a brother, and he rather socialized and used mm-hmm. his mental capacities, and she probably outdo him.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when the real world hits,
yes.
then it's like, oh
yeah.
my, what am I going to do?
Yeah, they had more perseverance, and, you know, they had to work harder to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a typical example.
That makes you feel good. It would
You're right.
Just have a small part in that success.
Yeah, yeah. You do have a lot, and a lot of people have told me.
Mm-hmm.
One mother said her son did the best in my room because I made him work. I didn't let up on a lot of them. I made them work, you know. I don't know today whether you could do that, but you just have to put the fear in them that you're in here to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And she said because of that fact that he did the best, and he was very intelligent, but he didn't use it. He needed somebody to really push him.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he never had enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it's good or bad to be that pushy or that aggressive with some people. I don't know.
Okay. How was your curriculum, course of study, developed?
The one in Warwick County was slowly developed. You're talking about the general curriculum, Michelle?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That
you worked
that
with?
For the county, we had to, all, every school in the county had to be following the same
mm-hmm.
idea. Well, Warwick County was very slow getting this developed. In fact, we didn't have one. We just were expected to do what the textbook said for many, many
mm-hmm.
years.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe halfway through my career, they start coming. We had teachers working on committees, you know, trying to get this mm-hmm. to a head. And so being in Warwick County, after it was finally developed, we referred to it so we'd all would be on the same line because of a student maybe transferring to another school. They would know just about where we were and what they had. And I don't know if they transferred to other schools, except the report card going with them. But our curriculum probably had to be some improvements made by the time this year, say not like 1998, since I left. I left in 1985. And I have seen other curriculums, but I don't think the Warwick County one was that great at that time. But we did follow it. You know, we did what we could, you know, with the instructions that were in it. I don't think I'm very helpful there, but as a teacher, I think everybody needs to refer to that because that is a guideline.
Well, did they, like, give you the curriculum and say, okay, this is what you're going to teach? And they say, okay, now you kind of choose... Because I think now teachers, well, your daughter is a teacher, but like Ms. Peters, doesn't she have more freedom to say, okay, I'm going to teach this, but not this?
I don't know.
Still county.
Yeah, I think that whenever that's all listed in there, itemized, like you say, pick out one subject like math.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking like in the grade 3, you know, they would say these things are to be accomplished. And it would be the, I'm sure all the addition, subtraction, and the multiplication facts should be mastered.
Mm-hmm.
And then each grade has, and then of course there would be other things pertaining to time and your other basics. But I'm sure that you have to follow pretty well. That's why you have a curriculum.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have a choice, but I know the curriculums are changing so drastically that maybe there are choices in presentation within your textbook. How you're going to do it. But as a curriculum guide in a county, I think that would be your main guide.
Source, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your main source.
Okay. How far did your paycheck go?
Well, I being a female, mine was in adjacent to my husband's paycheck. But if I were the single mother or the male, that was the sole income for the family, it would be very low. You'd have to have a secondary job, because I know some men that did. But as for a female with a husband bringing home a check and then mine as an alternate, it's great. And of course our unions, even though some people don't like that, have boosted our salaries much beyond what we probably would be getting if we have a union. I never did think I belonged to a union, but I did, and I found out that they do help us keep and maintain our a lot of our integrity and and a lot of things which involve school corporations. But now the paychecks are great, I think, for anyone really. If you're going to be the sole income or and secondary would be even better. You have a lot more money to reach your goals in life and have a higher standard of living. It helped us, I know, a lot. And I think everybody should have a job if they can. You know, after your children are raised, you feel so much more beneficial and helpful.
Well, what did your husband do for a living?
He worked at the Albertville Block Company, and he never had a high-paying job like some people. He was a truck driver and a block truck employee. So he had just an ordinary job. And we made do. We sent two daughters through us through college also. And sometimes the checking account became pretty low, but the longer we went, the better it got.
Describe any extracurricular activities you involved in as part of your school day.
Well, that is a big one. In a small elementary school where there are less than 100 children and maybe 10 on the faculty or less, we were involved in every extracurricular activity, especially in the sports from spring to from back up from fall to spring. And anything that was supposed to be like Clown Far Day, I'm just thinking a few of the incidents, talent shows, spelling bees, Christmas programs were a big item because we went all out in the elementary grades to present some real very nice Christmas programs. That was all done by the elementary teachers and with some help from the music department, which was part-time at a grade school like ours. We had a part-time music teacher, so we had to carry the ball, basically. And the sports were really, they take a lot of time, too. We had to man the doors, take the money, or run, work back in the popcorn department.
You were doing that would be on your drama.
Remember Mr. Hagan? He always run that. Mm-hmm. Did you work back there with him a lot, too?
A couple times. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember in the old gym. I wasn't there in the new.
Yeah.
It was way back in there in the corner at the stairwell.
That's the only place I remember working, back in that old gym.
Yeah. So don't you think, with your daughter being a teacher now, you might hear from her, that parents were more involved in their children's school activities when you were teaching versus now when she's teaching? Like, don't you think more parents helped with the ball games and the spelling bees? And
they probably did. I don't know exactly how it is today, but I know we had a lot of parents helping man the games. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the PTA, but it was the PTO members. They would help do certain things, like with library books. We had to have a library. Needed a library, and we didn't have any, so we had volunteer parents.
So what was the parent-teacher
organization?
Yeah,
PTO.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we, most of the schools in Warwick County deleted the PTA because of the state and national dues. Mm-hmm. This way we could keep all our money for our little school and our projects. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was very nice, yeah. And like, you worked on projects for them. Playground.
Mm-hmm.
And one time we had, you know, that tennis court set up out there.
Mm-hmm.
That was all done by volunteers and the staff.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us contributed, I think we contributed $25, we had our name on a plaque. But the extracurricular really did.
Took up a lot of time.
Oh, yes,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember coming home preparing a lot of things for the Christmas plays. You know, you had to have some costumes and some little hats. And every one of us, we'd all divide that up.
Mm-hmm.
Each one would take, and then we'd save them, you know, and recycle them every 4 or 5 years, and then we'd have to play again.
Yeah.
And
there you go. That's a good idea.
Yeah, and of course, I don't know if you consider bulletin boards extracurricular, but they are time-consuming if you want to put up some neat ones.
Yeah, I would think so.
And attending the PTO meetings that teachers were expected to, but they weren't required to. And so we only met 4 times a year instead of once a month. So that helped out a lot because that once a month, many people missed the meetings because it was just too often.
And then you had your parent-teacher conferences.
Yeah, they were just beginning that when I left the profession. They were just starting. In fact, we were in the pilot program one year, and then the next year or two, and then I was out. But that was very good because some parents you never, ever saw, and that got them in there one way or another. We saw one of them or maybe sometimes both. And it gave you a few clues maybe why the child was indifferent or, you know, that maybe that would be more helpful to the parents to get them involved in school. But I'm thinking, I don't know how successful it is today with all the people working. You know, I know it's difficult, and the teachers would be staying after school to meet.
And sometimes they meet before school. I noticed when they send a sign-up sheet home with my kids, they have a few 7:30 in the morning slots. So
they, again, teacher there. You'd be coming early.
Yeah.
And a lot of us always went early. We were there a half hour to 40 minutes early during the morning, or you'd stay that late after school, because if you take it home, you have more responsibility when you get home, with married, being married and with children. Mm-hmm. And you might as well do it all while you're at school and leave it, close the door and forget it if you can. And sometimes, though, if you had a bad day or whatever, or if there was something as, you know, you had to prepare, your day would go to midnight maybe, you know, if you had to prepare something. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about a bad day. See, something happened within the classroom and you didn't accomplish what you planned to. Sometimes you had to back up. They had to, I remember one time I had a student who was very sick. Well, the nurse wasn't in her room. We had a part-time nurse also. So we had to have somebody with the nurse or with the student. And, you know, the delay of cleaning up from a little vomit mess and things mm-hmm. like that. And you're completely disarrayed for a while till you get yourself back in, back into the teaching mode, you mm-hmm. might say. And there's events like that that just throw the day off. One time, you want to hear another one?
Yeah.
A girl came to school all upset. She was sobbing so hard when the day started that I asked her to step outside in the hall. I asked her, you know, what was bothering her so bad? She had lost her uncle, her favorite uncle, and they had sent her to school in that condition. And she was boo-hooing so loud that no one could concentrate. And I, at that time, I was lost. I needed a minister. I don't remember at all what I said, you know, to get her calmed down. But I do think I did mention that her parents probably thought if she would come to school and start thinking about her subjects, that maybe it would be better for her. And
wasn't.
You know, her mind was on that all day, but she stayed all day. Yeah, so there's all kinds of days or events that might, you have to get your balance back quick sometime. You know, you just have to be a person that can go from one, shift gears from one episode and get back into the mode, because you have all the students there looking. You have to be with it. Shed one thing, go on to the other. I don't know how you can describe a teacher, but they have to be everything.
Everything. Mm-hmm. Many hats.
Yes.
Many hats.
And there's a lot of people that do it every day. So.
Yeah. I think Holly
goes on. Yeah. Well, I hope you do well. You're headed in the right direction.
Okay, think of a historical event that happened during your teacher career. What was school like that day or around that day?
Yes, I can remember very clearly when President Kennedy was announced, pronounced dead or was shot in Dallas. One of my students had gone home for dinner and heard the news. And when she returned, she was the one who relayed the message. And I remember standing side of another teacher exactly. I can remember the exact spot in this. This was our old school with that one addition at it. And Mrs. Dedman, the other first grade teacher, and I was in third grade, and we were looking at each other. And we said, no matter what the politics is, it is a terrible, dreadful thing that we lost our president, you know. So, yeah, it was, and we discussed it in the room that this had happened.
Did not really understand what happened.
No, I just think that, and I think I let the girl who had told me the message, let her tell the students. I think that's how I did it. I didn't quite know hardly how to handle it. It kind of was emotional for me as an adult, but as a student, I don't think they realized the impact. I can't remember any more than that. I just remember hearing the news and then going home and, you know, immediately turning on television. Going from there. It was a shock. Yeah.
Here's one you could probably talk on forever. What were some of the most trying situations in your career?
I think I've been stressing a few of them. Well, probably a discipline disciplinary problem. Mm-hmm. And one, I can give you one, Michelle, that probably just take you to the core. We had, at that time, we had our reading groups come up front. And the little boy had just sharpened his pencil because they brought pencils and their workbook and a reader up to the reading class.
Mm-hmm.
He took that sharpened pencil and stood eraser down with a sharp point up, and another boy sat down on their full weight. I immediately, I don't remember if I had an intercom in the room, but I got the boy to the nurse that had that, and she immediately called the mother, and she came. She was at work somewhere in Evansville. Took him to the hospital, and they took out the lead, and he came back to school.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one, whenever there was, and he was such a good student, he was just on the mischievous side that day, had never caused any problems, and when you cause harm to another student at that time, our disciplinary code was that you receive a licking. And so I had to be a witness to that.
Mm.
And the principal did several licks on him and made him apologize to the boy when he came back. Mm. But it was a very trying day. And in another case, I remember another principal, it was the same code. And I had to witness this. It was a kid up in the eighth grade being disciplined, and when that paddle hit the boy, he was shaking so bad, it was harder on me to get myself back in gear, you know, get back in the classroom than...
Did you ever spank? Because I remember sometimes a teacher would ask
you. Yes. A few times. I didn't do it very often, but I had one boy who never prepared his homework, and I had the approval from the parents.
That I may whip him if he didn't get his homework. Well, that started early in the school year, and it never did improve.
Huh. I got, you know, to the point I knew one strike, you know, I just had him bend over and hit him with a soccer paddle, you know, as a small piece of wood. And I could see that wasn't doing any good. The next day I said, if you're not done, you have your homework, you'll get two of these. Well, it increased, and it never did improve.
Hmm.
I may have stopped on the fifth or sixth one. I thought, well, this is dumb. And I think he just went on through the year with real low grades because he didn't do his homework. He was a real problem child. Those were some of the trying situations. And then we had one student who was very... come from a home probably where he was taught it was all right to strike anybody, and he defied the principal. He could look, and he was tall as me almost. I'm tall.
In third grade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very tall. I think he had failed a few grades or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I was afraid to turn my back because he didn't stay at that. I think he didn't even complete the third grade in my room. He was there either first, second, and third, or part of second and third. And we knew this was really a problem student. And I heard, I don't know when, but he was killed in a gang. He was in the gang thing. But he was raised by his parents to be very, and that was so scary. But one boy stole so bad. We had one student that he was raised by his grandparents, and he was stealing something all the time. One time he went in the teacher's lounge and took somebody's billfold.
Went in the teacher's lounge?
Mm-hmm. That's how brazen this little boy was. His grandparents loved him so much they didn't have any discipline over him, and so he'd come to school forever taking something from a student. Now he's getting them out. He got this out of the lounge, and they searched waste baskets. They saw somebody witness him coming out of the lounge and going into the boys' restroom. Remember how that situation was in our hallway?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they couldn't find anything in any of the waste baskets, and somebody said, "You better look in the dumpster. Maybe it's out there. Maybe he later on put it out there." And that's where they found it the next day, the bill for it, with all the money out.
So was there any discipline with that, or do you remember?
I don't remember in that case, but I'm sure there was. But in the case that I'm recalling, where I saw him I don't remember exactly what he did, but I saw him do something. I don't know if he struck someone. I don't remember the exact detail, but I saw it happen. And I took another teacher and this boy and myself into the nurse's room. And I had to get stronger and stronger and stronger with him. Mm-hmm. By that I meant I had my paddle, mm-hmm. and he wouldn't admit what he had done. I wish I could remember the exact thing what he had done. But anyway, I said, George, I saw you do that, and you're going to tell me you did it. And I said, bend over. I said, you think about it. You bend over, and you'll get one lick, and then you give me the answer. I did that about four times. And finally, the other teacher said, I don't think he's going to give in. I said, yes, he will. And I did it one more time. I think on the fifth lick, he admitted he had stolen this thing.
Was his name George?
Mm-hmm. I maybe shouldn't have said that. He's in jail all the time.
Yeah.
But he was, you know, a problem in the neighborhood and everywhere. But, and of course, and since he was slightly crippled. He had either suffered some kind of polio or something. One leg was shorter than the other. Then the nurse got upset with me on, it seemed like, because I had done that. I said, it was just a ping pong paddle. There aren't any marks. She looked to see if there was any marks that day. I said, what I did couldn't have hurt anyone.
Since you brought that up, how do you feel about the school systems that have taken that out as a form of discipline?
Well, I'm from the old school, and I think if you hit it the nail while... If you do it while the episode's going on, you hit it on the head, it has more meaning than if you have to lecture them. But first, you always talk with them first and try to get a reasonable answer from them and reason with them. But if this is a problem child, sometimes you don't hardly ask for any reasons, like in the case I just mentioned, because it went on so prevalent and so often that, you know, you just say, get the witness and say, hey, you know, you're going to admit you did this. And most of the time after you consult the parents, if you're having this problem, and we had always sent a statement home, time you go through all those procedures, you know, maybe the first time that's plenty good. Maybe that will stop it. But if it's a continuous thing, I still think that the school should have the authority, the principal maybe, and the teacher be the witness. There should be somewhere along the line after it happened so many times that the administrator still may use corporal punishment. Because I believe they still do in Indiana, don't they? I know they don't want to.
No, I don't think they do in our area, do they?
Maybe it's off now. I don't know.
I don't think they're around too.
Maybe not. See, I've been out of it since 85, so... I know it was still done when I quit in 85. Yeah, As a last resort. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It used to be that, I have seen where some of them were just taken out and yanked out, hardly discussed, or in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember, you know, in my grade school days, not knowing, though, what happened. We remember a principal lining up a whole bunch of them and running them through with a paddle. You know, and of course, it frightened everybody else. But most time back in those days, there were a lot less problems than there are today.
I'm glad you said that.
Yes.
I agree with that.
Yeah. I think it is because of the soft discipline and, I'll tell you later about a book I'm reading. Has a lot to do with our society. We're just too soft. Children want guidance.
Yeah, they do.
And they want discipline.
Yeah.
The teachers should give some discipline, but it's difficult to when the administrator won't back you. Say, you know, you corrected a student, maybe verbally, maybe in a too loud of a fashion or something. I don't know how you could be going wrong, but I had been, even while I was teaching, I had been said that I yelled at certain people. I said, I did yell at the people that were causing problems, and I always told the rest of the students, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the ones who didn't get their lessons today are the one who misbehaved out of recess. I did not always take them out in the hall for a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're leaving your kids unattended.
Yeah.
And we're not allowed to do that either. No, you can't do that. You got to be in the classroom all the time. Mm-hmm. And things still happen, like the boy who sat on this sharp pencil.
Yeah.
That one floored me.
They're sitting on pencils then, but now they're bringing in guns and knives and
drugs. It is beyond my comprehension.
Do you think you would want to teach today?
No, not really. I still might be challenged enough to teach lower grades. But the farther up you go, yeah, I only had gone to the third grade. Mm-hmm. I had been offered to teach up because I like science so well in the seventh and eighth. But I declined. I said I didn't know enough for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I could get along yet in the first, second, and third grade. I think the worst part why I would decline would be the parents. Because some years, if you have a parent, our parents, that are continually riding with you on a problem child, and you recommend testing, you recommend everything humanly possible, and they're pushing you to promote that child, and you know that they're not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to present them the results of all these tests. And today I think it's a little bit easier because the teacher isn't on your own. I used to have to do it on my own.
Mm-hmm.
But now you have the all the testing personnel to do all this and give them all the results. And this is what we recommend, not just the teacher. But see then, when it's a teacher only doing it, you always received a lot of backlash out in the community.
Mm.
You were known as, you know, Mr. or Mrs. Ruff, or they had some proper names for you. And that still goes on today because there's one up in Elberfeld that they run down so bad. She is an excellent teacher, but she's gotten some, I guess, riled up about something, and she is an excellent teacher. And another teacher will have a parent that say, well, I don't want my child in her room. And then this, being a professional person, will say, well, that's the room you should be in. Your child would do better in that room than the one you're trying to choose, you know.
Well, my children go there. I can't think of any teacher I wouldn't want them to have.
Yeah. All right.
Just the preference of the parent.
Yes. Well,
they want their little Johnny to be the prime and the best and not get in trouble.
And this goes on in large schools. My other daughter has a...
Is she a teacher, too?
No. She works at Welburn. She's in the computer department.
In
fact, when my two were growing up, this may be a little shock to the education department and maybe you, Michelle, but I said, I don't know if you should try to be teachers or not. It's not a bed of roses. But Ruthie was like you, like me. I always thought that would be what I wanted to do the rest of my life. And somebody has to do it. But I didn't encourage them to be teachers because, you know, the everlasting work that's involved, especially in the primary grades. And it may be worse up in the upper grades, and I just don't realize it. But I always felt like first, second, and third had so much more preparation because the fact that you could not get the children always to be occupied while you were preparing something. I have seen upper classes where they have the children, you know, the students working on they say, we'll do page so-and-so in math, and then they could be doing some preparation for the next. And you can hardly do that in the lower grades because of the personal going with each
individual.
One. Because some are going to come. I often had them come to my desk if they couldn't get it or didn't understand it. Or, you know, walk around the classroom, see if somebody's off on the wrong track. But, you know, I think in the upper grades, you might have a few more advantages that way. But preparation-wise, you'd have to be there, too.
Okay, when did you feel successful? Describe a successful event in your career.
Well, when? I liked every year, really, except maybe a couple years. Each year, you felt like you had accomplished something. And as the years progressed, it seemed like maybe with your experience and knowledge, in the same classroom year after year that you were doing a little bit better through the students, and maybe you felt like your first years, you know, you can remember that you could have applied more ideas, and as you progress, you can, as a teacher, you can really grow in your efficiency as a teacher, and, you know, be more effective in reaching the children. And I guess the last few years, I felt, you know, really great about what I
Now that you're retired, you can look back and reflect and look and see where you were successful.
Yeah, and you often in the community get have comments from past students. And like I told you earlier, with some parents, you know, they can reflect back. Then you know, you feel that at least you did make a some little dent.
You don't want to be praised and glorified or anything. You just want
to,
I did do something.
Right, that you're just part of
all that work paid off. Even one student succeeded in life.
Yeah. One day it was real funny. Got out of the vehicle, just arrived at school, got out of the vehicle, and here jumped out of an old Jeep, the most grizzly. He had fur, long beard all over his face. "Hey, Miss Hyman, you remember me?" I said, "Well, I sure do. You're Kenny Fletcher." I didn't believe that I remember it. Some I would never recall, but it's funny who you remember.
Yeah. And that made him feel good that you remembered, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was funny. I thought that was funny. But, it just gets better as you go, I really think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Last question. Describe the best aspects of the teaching profession. What are the most challenging aspects?
Now, probably I'll back up and I'll start with the first, or the question, what are the most challenging? I think probably is discipline. Keeping the interest and the motivation of your students actively, and, you know, wanting them to grasp everything that you're trying to learn, that they're trying to learn. And it's challenging as a teacher to try to get that, you know, get this across. Some of it is more rote, and I think today they probably do not drill as much as they should. They, in certain subjects, in spelling and reading, and especially in math, the more you repeat, the more you practice, that child is going to be, there's going to be some that will know it the first time you go through it, but the majority will not.
Mm-hmm.
And to retain it, you pick it up week by week. And I found this to be a real big challenge. And just going, getting your curriculum goals and trying to get them to be the best. That's one thing you really strive for, is to get the best, get the most, I'm trying to think of that word, the most, anyway, the best out of each student is a real challenge, I think. And I think that's part of being a teacher, maybe some of the best aspects of your profession is getting through. And, you know, you're just part of a person's life.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to be a person who brags about it or anything, but you just know that, you know, you've done your job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the main thing. I had one principal say to me, one of my first ones, that said, you don't owe your children anything, your students anything, but you're here for one thing, and that is to impart the knowledge that you are supposed to in your grade level.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what he meant by you don't owe them anything. I mean, I think then people were having parties, you know, occasionally, and giving them a lot of snacks and things like that as incentives.
Yeah.
So you can do so much of that, but maybe strive more on academics, you know, and really brag that up when they do a good job, you know, put a smile or post their papers, you know, and, you know, give pat on the back, you know, and all those type things that make the students feel quite, they've accomplished something is the main thing. It's been fun, Michelle.
Yeah.
I'm trying to recall things.